This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Did you bring your milk money?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The price of milk is now about the same as the price of gas, almost $4 a gallon. There may be a lot of reasons milk prices have gone up so much, but one of them could be that dairy farmers are manipulating the price. The Wall Street Journal says the government is about to bring charges of price fixing. Dan Gretsch has more.
Over the past 4 years, consumer milk prices have risen about 32%. That's more than double the rate of increase for food prices in general. The Department of Agriculture alleges the dairy farmers of America drove down what it paid for raw milk by misreporting prices to the USDA. And the dairy co-op allegedly drove up the price retailers paid for the milk through trading at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Henry Kanukin is an agricultural economist at Auburn University. He found in a study that while milk price increases are passed on to consumers, milk price drops are pocketed by middlemen like the dairy farmers of America.
When farm prices go down, the retail prices tend to be sticky, which means that the margins are widened. And that's a fairly classic symptom of market power being exercised by middlemen.
Revenue for the dairy farmers of America grew to $11.1 billion in 2007, up nearly 50% from the year before. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Wall Street is off to a ho-hum start for the week. In early trading, the Dow is up 16 points to 13,003. The NASDAQ has gained 6. The S&P 500 is up 2 points. In Europe, stocks are up about 1% near the close. Stocks in Asia added a fraction today. In China, the stock market stopped trading for 3 minutes. And all over the country, car horns blare. It marked the beginning of 3 days of mourning for the victims of last week's earthquake. The death toll could reach 50,000. Reporter Jamila Trindle joins us now from the earthquake zone. Jamila, what's happening with the people who survived?
Well, there are a couple official shelters that have been set up in stadiums and schools, and they're being given food, and people have set up places where they can make free phone calls. But in addition to that, just driving around, you see all these tents set up everywhere. So there's a lot of different ways that people are coping for now, but it's unclear what the next step will be for them.
And what about the aid that is coming in from the government, and I also understand from the people of China?
There's been a large outpouring of aid, and volunteers have been arriving, sometimes too many and too disorganized. But there's been a lot of aid from different companies. The government, they're offering about $1.40 a day for people that have been affected and displaced by the quake. And so they're really hoping that people will cycle through these camps of 15,000 to 30,000 people.
China kind of stood still today with the moment of silence, and the stock market had a moment of silence, and a lot of things were closed. But there's going to be a process here of people getting back on their feet financially. Do we know anything about the plans for that happening?
Individuals seem to have little plan as to what to do next. Even the buildings that are still standing and look to be okay, workers are hesitant to go back into them. And of course, we've heard a lot in the past week about how substandard the school buildings were.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are hoping the government will come in with some sort of effort to rebuild. But individuals have little means to rebuild themselves. A lot of people have lost absolutely everything. As far as where they're going to go from there, it's still unknown.
Jamila Trindle in China's Sichuan province, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, committed to writing about issues that matter and the connections between them. The Economist, see the world differently at newsstands and economist.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, online at shrm.org.
Yahoo and Microsoft are back to flirting. They're not talking about a full-blown marriage this time, just a casual relationship in online searches and advertising. The buyout is off the table for the moment, to the chagrin of many Yahoo shareholders, but not all of them.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Alan Sloan, you say in deals like this, shareholders usually fall into two camps. What do you mean by that?
Well, when some offer has surfaced, many of the big shareholders of the company, that's what we call in the trade the target, have to decide whether they want to hold the stock to see if the deal goes through or whether they want to sell it in the market and let someone else, known in the trade as a risk arbitrageur, take the risk.
But in this case, the deal fell through. So what happened?
The stock had been 19 before Microsoft appeared, so a lot of players took their 50% windfall, you know, from 19 to 28, and had given the risk to the buyers, and they really got whacked when Microsoft originally called off the deal. The price of Yahoo stock fell rather sharply. Then they complained publicly about Yahoo, which I thought was really sort of childish, because they could have sold their stock.
Well, Alan, are you a patient type investor, or are you an arbitrageur?
These days, I'm patient with a little soupçon of arb, because, again, I happen to own Wrigley stock, and Wrigley, I've owned it for years and years and years. And as you may or may not know, Wrigley was dragging along in the 60s, and an offer came for 80 from the Mars family and Warren Buffett. And the stock shot up. You know, it's very, very high in the, right, in the high 70s. So I have a question of whether or not to sell into the market in the 70s or to wait for my 80. And I've pretty much chosen to wait for my 80 because I think it's, you know, a reasonably certain thing to happen. Now, if it turns out the deal breaks up and the stock goes back to 60, you'll hear me sobbing, but you won't hear me whining.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Feel free to share your thoughts with us online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.